which had no material evidence.
And how was the Justice Department involved?
Yeah, well, they were just they helped with the investigation, and we don't even know everything they did. There are people trying to find that out now. But it is, you know, you can see why people in Brazil see this as very unusual. I mean, imagine that, you know, Russia was involved in the investigation of Mueller's investigation here. You know, it's inherently suspicious. But I want to say just, I hope, you know.
We just have 30 seconds, Mark.
Yeah, okay. So this is this is one thing I want to say, that people don't think this is all hopeless. You know, you do have the 76-member Progressive Caucus in the U.S. Congress that has taken very strong positions. There's a letter circulating right now in Congress that's calling for the release of Lula. And they put out a statement, congratulated AMLO on his victory and supporting this kind of foreign policy. You have people like Ro Khanna, who just had a piece in The Nation with Danny Glover. And all these people, you have a real force here that is saying that that is clearly against any kind of regime change efforts, that respects sovereignty in Latin America. And this is a very big thing, and it's a very hopeful thing. And I want to make sure people understand that, that this is a major effort at resistance to these kinds of policies that we haven't had for quite
a
while.
And Danny Glover just visited Lula in prison in Brazil.
That's right.
Well, if people want to hear our interview with Lula right before he went to prison, you can go to democracynow.org. Mark Weisbrot, we want to thank you for being with us, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, president of Just Foreign Policy. We'll link to your pieces on these variety of issues on Latin America.
While in Atlanta, Danny Lyon joined the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and acted as staff photographer from 1962 to 1964. His first solo photography book, The Bike Riders, A Study of Outlaw Motorcyclists, was published in 1968. Following his publication of The Bike Riders, Lyon completed documentary work on the Texas prison system. Lyon's work is very personal and gives us, the viewer, access to people and places we wouldn't normally get to see.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Danny Lyon film screening on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Danny Lyon will be in Portland to show the films Willie and Murderers. Again, that's the Danny Lyon film screening on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning. This is KBOO Portland. And KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Bernstein Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Grendel's Coffee House is open daily until 6 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550. That's 503-595-9550.
Streaming down your face when I said I'll never let you go. When all those shadows almost killed your light. I remember you said, don't leave me here alone. But all that's dead and gone and past tonight.
morning. You're listening to Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. My name's Lou, L-E-W, Lou Church. This is Paul's program, but Paul's away for a few weeks. And I'm hoping that Sally Fransman Cecil, who helped do a program with Paul and I a couple weeks ago, I think, will come as well. She's scheduled and she's been here, so we'll see if she arrives shortly. We're also talking with Edie Gillis this morning. Good morning, Edie.
Good morning.
And Edie's a person who's worked on a lot of different organizing projects, somewhat similar to Sally and I. I met her at Occupy ICE this week. Why don't you go ahead and describe some of the things that you've worked on? Would that be okay?
I've been working on domestic violence prevention, correction, healing, advocacy for survivors, and transformation of character of perpetrators for most of my life. Over half a century, trying to stop drilling in the Arctic, killing of wolves and killing of people, and to have energy be diversified, democratized, decentralized, and localized, publicized, or publicly owned. I've been working on a bunch of issues that I see as interconnected, and most of the last half century, people have thought I was wrong to see the interconnectivity between war and banking and the environment and oppression of indigenous peoples and women and children, but I'm glad to hear that and see that people are now being able to see the connect the dots. It was fun to be at the 1999 WTO protest and to see people were connecting the dots, how it all connects and how we need to work together and real active solutions for doing so.
Are there similarities? I was in Seattle, I was in Seattle the week before WTO, and I'm at Portland State. I mentioned yesterday, we have shown a film called Battle in Seattle about that protest. But when I student taught high school history at Benson High School, we talked about WTO and Seattle, and students, at least in my class in social studies, had not heard of the protest at all. And we even looked up the word globalization. Apparently, it was somewhat new as a term at that point. Are there things that you thought were useful in terms of current strategy with what happened with, in particular, the police in Seattle with WTO?
Well, some good and bad things came from that. We were seeing people understand how bad international policy, socioeconomic, political, military, trade affects the whole world. So we had indigenous folks from the Amazon wearing barely any clothes at all talk about Chevron and mining and corruption of government through the World Trade Organization, through the International Monetary Fund, World Bank, as well as indigenous farmers from Japan. We were seeing people dressed up as turtles. We were having steel union workers. We were seeing religious leaders from all kinds of religions, some I didn't even know existed. We were having long-term wealth, saying how they got their wealth from stealing land and oppressing people, and now they want to turn it around to do good. We were seeing folks talk about slavery, and women and children in the sex trade, and how that was through funding and supporting fossil fuel development and deforestation. And that was, we had fishers, indigenous as well as big corporate shipping, fishing industry. We had a wide range of folks. We had the Seattle Jobs with Justice remind us of the 1939 West Coast strike, in which we had tens of thousands of people go on strike.
What year was that?
1939. So we had a wide variety of people across the board, and it was wonderful to see people defy the divide and conquer tactics. Jobs versus the environment was proven as a false conflict. We had, so we Alan Graf, the hippie lawyer, KBOO Radio, was talking about how he was going to have his son come to the teach-in. And I was going to drive up there. I had arranged with my son's middle school teacher that he could get out of some assignments that he didn't really like and want to do, and instead do a report on this. But of course, my car broke down. And then the car rental place didn't get the car rented out in time, and delays. Mm-hmm. So we missed the teach-in, but we were there for the protests. We went to the Union's auditorium, big stadium, and they had over 30,000 people in the stadium. And then about a third or more than that joined us after all the rally and speeches. So we had at least 40,000 in one main, the most family-friendly, permitted, you know, polite, nonviolent protests. But there was 10,000 in another group, and there was 20,000 in another group, and there was 5,000 in another group, and then there was several dozens that were in another group of different types of protest, of shutting down the World Trade Organization, and emphasizing how people from Africa, Latin America, Asia were being screwed by the World Trade Organization, by the rich countries, and how it was hurting everyone in the world. The police were so brutal, and they didn't have a, and they're allowing free speech to a point that then that bad result was that they had cuddling or protest-free zones, or an official protest zone far, far away that it would get press and wouldn't affect things. The chief of police of Seattle saw how horribly it was taken over by the feds, FBI, et cetera, how brutal they were, how corrupt it was, how his officers were endangered. And he was kind of put in a rock, between a rock and a hard place. Right. So he had a lot of blame for how horrible the feds were, and resigned. And then he became a strong spokesperson for protests and against police tactics that have gotten more and more brutal over time. One thing that the mayor had asked us to come by public transit, not pollute, not clog
up.
You
mentioned that yesterday, I think, or the other day when I was talking to you.
And so we came in, we obeyed, we were polite and nice, and then they unilaterally had a curfew and required us to go out or would be subject to chemical weapons. So we got on the buses and were leaving town, and then the Seattle police and the FBI and other police of whatever jurisdictions hijacked the buses, got on the buses, and ordered us back into downtown Seattle against the law that they had just imposed on us, or the threat. And then they pepper sprayed us, and they wouldn't let us out of the, you know, wouldn't let us use toilets, wouldn't let us get free, and would be pepper. My little girl, who's now 24, a little girl at the time, was just traumatized by seeing an officer, maybe 2-3 inches from the face, that have the nozzle of this big pepper spray. Right. Canister in a black woman's face, and that led her to say, okay, my life work is to stand up for blacks being oppressed by white cops.
How old was your daughter then?
Well, that was in 1999, so she would have been 6.
Right, I was guessing 7 or 8, but sort of close. The reason I was going to mention or ask about that is to try to talk about as well. I wanted, to some extent, for a theme. Usually, talk radio on KBOO tends to ask a single question or 2 or 3 generative questions for callers to call in on. And so it sounds like the multi-issue focus, one of the things that you liked with the WTO protest, even though I think you said initially some people thought relating issue to issue to issue wasn't necessarily helpful in some situations. But I thought I would mention some things that I tried to jot down today, of things that we might be able to talk about and give the calling number, which people may know, of course. The police role in WTO, I think, is interesting. I read a book by Rebecca Solnit, who I think was one of the organizers, S-O-L-N-I-N-T, for the protest. And since it looks like the most active protest over time now in Portland is Occupy ICE, Perhaps we can compare and contrast police response and police accountability in Portland, the local police versus the feds. That could be one possible topic. I was hoping we also, Sally and I are planning on doing this program for Paul next week as well, and possibly longer. Paul's gone, I think, for 4 weeks, to talk about organizing and strategy, like what works, what doesn't work, what's a feasible way to get things changed and tangible results. I should also mention, I don't think I did at the start, Sally and I both volunteer with the newly re-upped chapter of Portland Gray Panthers, which also tries to use something that I think Edie mentioned, which is intersectionality and intergeneration organizing. One of the things that we've worked on a fair amount, and it's fine if people aren't happy with it as a topic, but we're actually, Sally and I are going to go and meet with some Logan Temp tenants in Canby later today on HUD housing. Ben Carson is the Secretary of HUD under Trump, who has proposed a 300% rent hike, and we're anxious to meet with three women organizers in Canby. I've been to Canby once. So that's a project Sally and I will work on later today. It looks like Sally's coming in now, which is good. I also wanted to mention, as a possible topic, and people can call in about different sorts of organizing issues, of course. There's the Portland State Police shooting has been, at least at my school, which is Portland State, the most recent act of protest. Hundreds of students and activists protested the shooting that happened about a week ago of a grandfather who's African-American and apparently worked for 20 years at the post office outside the Cheerful Tortoise Tavern, kind of the main bar at Portland State. So that might tie into how we try to hold police accountable, what are specific solutions at PSU as a school. what else? I talked to a couple organizers at Portland State. We were trying to evaluate the Poor People's Campaign because the idea of the Poor People's Campaign was to have intersectionality. And yet what we were trying to evaluate was the Poor People's Campaign this year not very visible or not that well organized. It was certainly well intentioned and very organized within parameters. Or was it just that mainstream media didn't cover it? We're not sure. So I think Sally might be plugged in now that she's here. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, pretty good.
How is traffic?
Detours.
Detours. Well, I appreciate you coming. This is Edie. You all haven't met before. I should give the call-in number, too, in case people have thoughts, strategies, questions about organizing in general. 503-231-8187. So should I ask you a question, or do you want to sit a while?
Oh, I can start later.
Okay, all right, fine. So do you want to try to address... and the other thing I noticed also, this morning was the letter section and Joe and Abe's show last week both discussed quite extensively the role and alleged problems with Antifa as an organization. Some of us at Portland State are pretty supportive and happy with Antifa, but apparently it's a huge bone of contention. I think a week ago on the Tuesday morning program here, some callers said that they felt Joe and Abe were demonizing Antifa unfairly. So I don't know which thing you might want to jump in on there.
I would really encourage people to look at the documentary on anti-fascism and why there's the philosophy of Antifa or Antifa. Historically, we see that when you allow fascists to have a public forum and public speech, they organize, they get more people, and hate crimes and violence increase, terrorism and trauma increase, marginalization increases. And in the different countries where they've done exhaustive research for generations, the one thing that reduces the horrible crimes is when you have a quick, rapid, full, strong, no bars held response saying, no, these values are wrong, we will not allow it. You can have whatever thoughts you want to have, your own thoughts. We're not policing your thoughts. You can have only private conversations, but in the public forum, this is a safe space for folks, safe from hate crimes and violence. And we will not have organizing. We will not have a conspiracy, and we will not have provocation of violence. And so it's really important to come out in front and to say no. And the reason why there's a face covering is safety from the cops, safety from the fascists, but also solidarity with oppressed peoples, and a way that you're not having exercising your white privilege over someone, person of color. And it's a way of saying it's not about personalities. It's about the principle. If it's right no matter who does it to whom. If it's wrong no matter who does it to whom. And we're going to protect our most vulnerable people by saying no. And most of the violence is not Antifa, Antifa. It is the police. It's the economic system. It is the fascists in and out of uniform. At the May Day 2017, which is about how anarchists are defending workers and immigrant families.
I understand. I talked to you the other day. Right.
At the beginning of this permitted, family-friendly, immigrant, indigenous person-centered festival, fair, rally, and parade or march, at the end were Rose City Antifa, were different anarchists, and they were to protect the back of the parade or the march, and they did an excellent job. Three shopping carts that were decorated like Black Widow to represent the arachnid that protects the ecosystem is maligned, is considered really dangerous, but we need to rethink it. And as a field biologist, I like to have us reexamine reality. And in one shopping cart, they'd have like water they're giving out to everybody. They had first aid supplies for the chemical weapons that the fascists in uniform use. And they had bubbles and little parade, you know, treats and snacks and fun gifts for folks. And at the end of the parade, when the police had been provoking for hours and hours, pushing their bikes against people, committing different violent crimes, the Antifa and the anarchists kept control, self-disciplined, were very heroic and nonviolent. The police were provoking.
And this is in Portland.
This is in Portland in the South Park blocks off of Salmon. And the cops were just provoking, but the Antifa were being so brave and heroic, saving, protecting the kids. At the end, when the police were making false accusations and then unilaterally closing down, calling it a riot, when the only one rioting were the cops, it was the anarchists at the back who protected the folks from the chemical weapons. They made a space between the chemical weapons and the attacking violent police, and the vulnerable elderly children and people with disabilities who the cops already stolen their accessibility vehicle at the front.
I should also
protected them.
Also mention it. It sounded like we had the first caller. I'll give the phone number again. It sounded like Jane, if that's what I got the message for. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's a little quiet, but it's okay.
Okay.
Sometimes it is that way.
Thanks for calling in.
I really have a huge frustration with people who want to demonize Antifa for what they do in the streets, and I think that what the guest said is important to remember, that we tend to value property over people, and so understanding that violence isn't just people fighting. It's the stuff that causes people to fight in the first place. And I just, and I was calling in and talking. I called into the Abe and Joe radio show one morning and was just, because I feel like a lot of times I'm not trying to be, antagonistic.
Sure, no, it's fine.
But it's like they really try to push that thing where it's like, violence begets violence. And sometimes I wish that people would just stop quoting Gandhi or MLK, I mean, Dr. King was ahead of his time in terms of thought, but, his love, his central love was always for the black community, and it frustrates me to no end that, you know, it's like we there's people who are frustrated, people who've been fighting for generations, and we keep, and people of color, we keep getting asked to just wait, to just be patient, to just, you know, to give our due diligence, and, you know, and we have, and it's, and I feel like it's unfair to ask us to continue to do that all the time.
Yes.
And I'm not saying we should go out there and, you know, and pick fights, but I'm also, you know, it's like, you know, it's like Dr. King would say, you know, it's, you know, the riot is the voice of the unheard. You know, you can't tell people that, you know, that their freedom comes on a timeline, that their, that their recognition of their humanity comes on a timeline.
Sure.
And, you know, and realizing that, you know, even those who stood in nonviolence as a way to be able to assert their moral center, you know, they have been killed by the people they've been trying to assert their humanity to.
Well, I was also gonna add, excuse me, for people, I was gonna say that I would put out the phone number for other people who would want to debate this issue or organizing a strategy. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. Did you have another comment about not demonizing or?
Well, you know, I guess it's like, I feel like we need a front of both people who are willing to put themselves in the harm's way. Because, you know, I feel like people want, you know, just an army of generals, you know, because we do need people out there who are willing to do the political tactician stuff. But we also need people who are people on the ground who are willing to fight to protect, not to provoke, not to be mean-spirited, but people who, you know, who want to be on the front line.
Sure.
And not
have you been like pretty regular at ICE Occupy so far?
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
I was just asking about like I mentioned at the beginning, Edie and I met at Occupy ICE the other day, and I'm also asking people that you know, believe in frontline activism, not just generals, if they've had a chance, especially older people. At least I think some of our observation was that Occupy ICE in Portland, this may be true in other cities, tends to be people maybe under 30 or 25, and that it may also be important, since Sally and I are both senior elder organizers, to have older people do that. And I was just wondering if you yourself had a chance to go to the Occupy ICE thing. It's at the end of the streetcar downtown.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to go to Occupy ICE, but I really support what they're doing.
Right.
And I just, you know, and it's, yeah, But that's the kind of stuff that we need. And I keep explaining to people the reason why people of color have rights is because we've been aggressive, not just politically, but, you know, on the ground. You know, some of the staunchest anti-Antifa people, when you explain to them that, you know, our country glorifies violence as long as it supports the power structure. You know, you explain to them, you know, people who look at, you know, look at bootlegging. People look fondly on the time when they were bootlegging liquor when the government outlawed it, but they don't tell you that they killed women, children, and cops in order to get the liquor where it needed to go. And not only do they glorify it, NASCAR is an extension of it.
Well, I should probably... Right. No, I agree. I should probably... Yeah. Thank you for calling in, and see if we have comments from, it shouldn't just be you and me, since we have Sally and
yeah,
Edie
sorry,
here as well.
Yeah, just,
no, that's fine.
I'm just really passionate about this topic.
No, that's good. I appreciate the call.
I'd actually like to address part of what he said.
Sure.
I'm a pacifist. I have participated in civil disobedience. I've done nonviolent direct action. I have been a marshal. Actually, I was a marshal once in a march in Wilmington, where we got, as Episcopal Peace Fellowship people, recruited to do it when we were practically the only white people there as pacifists. But as a pacifist, I feel very much that pacifism is a choice. It's one kind of choice that people make. One of the comments that I had heard from some of the protests, this would have been back east, was that from the pacifists, they commented that the Antifa people stood between them and the violence of the right, of the people that were there. That was the instance in which somebody was killed in the
sure,
in the
lotto. No.
Yeah, that was that instance. And, you know, I would not necessarily encourage people to be violent. However, to make the choice to stand between violence and people that have chosen nonviolence seems to me like a legitimate choice. That you can't, I don't necessarily think that people are doing that are particularly going to be instigating violence.
Well, at Portland State, we had a series of meetings, I may have mentioned before, for 4 Sundays in a row with 100 students debating a Ward Churchill article, which was, Ward Churchill's a writer critical of COINTELPRO and FBI, Native American teacher who was teaching in Colorado. But his article was called, a small book, Pacifism as Pathology. So he was arguing kind of what the caller suggested about, that there's privilege, and in this argument, a critique of Gandhi and Dr. King, among others, that lots of people are just basically doing defensive tactics, not necessarily that you're instigating violence. It's the thing that I think of that we've talked about quite a bit at Portland State is the very end of Do the Right Thing with Spike Lee. I showed the film to a group of students and some community people, and we had a very staunch, liberal, democratic older woman who came and just said, well, that film is ridiculous. Spike Lee is advocating violence because he throws the garbage can through the window. But the two quotes at the end of the film, one's from Malcolm X and one's from Dr. King, and they're suggesting that there are alternative strategies for how you want to try to defend your community and promote the projects that you're working on to try to get tangible results. We also, as part of Paul's program, we get to mention some other things that are coming up. We're about halfway in for today. Again, the phone number, if you want to call in, is 503-231-8187. We're talking about organizing, strategy. I suggested evaluating Poor People's Campaign if someone wishes to do that. Intersectional organizing, etc. So here's some information that Paul normally does, and I think other hosts do as well. In terms of KBOO for today, at 9 o'clock, there's a program that looks at 25 years of anti-death penalty activism. It's called On the Ground Radio. That's an issue, actually, I'm breaking the way we're supposed to do this, which is just read through the announcements. But anti-death penalty organizing is something that at Portland State some has worked on quite a bit. I was able to listen to not Susan Sarandon, but the nun she played in the anti-death penalty movie at University of Portland, a Catholic school, recently. So I think that's an excellent project. 10 o'clock this morning on Wednesday, there are interviews and updates from the ICE, Occupy ICE people. KBOO, as listeners may know, KBOO and Street Roots both have booths and tables at the Occupy ICE location. And it's pretty easy to get to if people want to go to it and haven't gone to it. It's at the end of the streetcar line. It's on the corner of McAdam, and it's right next to Reach, which is a nonprofit housing building.
And the corner of Bancroft.
Yeah, it's easy to find. It's pretty close to downtown. So that program at 10 o'clock is Air Cascadia, reporting live from Occupy. There's a program with Dennis Bernstein at 10:30 this morning, Wednesday, Flashpoints. There's a gardening question, gardening program at 11 a.m. this morning, Wednesday, which is called The Dirt, D-I-R-T, Dirt Bag, about gardening questions. And of course, as people who are listeners of KBOO know, KBOO is a listener-supported station. So programs and discussions like we're having today are generated and able to be on the air by people supporting KBOO, member support. If people are interested in being a member of KBOO, you can go to kboo.fm and there's a click that says donate, D-O-N-A-T-E, donate. So those are the whatever you call it, the de rigueur, is that pronounced the right way? Things that we're supposed to mention halfway through talk programs. It sounds like we may have another caller. Is that correct? Go ahead. Can you hear me? We may or may not.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead. Good morning.
Yeah, you mentioned COINTELPRO, and I don't know if people, the Antifa people, are familiar with that. It's, you know, they must be. I mean, they must be getting coaching on watching out for infiltration from agents provocateurs, the kind of people who will absolutely ruin a peaceful demonstration by intentionally creating violent acts that will then explode into something that's you know, could be dangerous for people. And the it's a time-honored tactic of authoritarians to ruin things like that. And I don't hear it mentioned very often. I mean, and it's well documented. There's a long history of it, and I just don't hear it talked about very much. Anyone want to comment on that?
Sally, Edie?
I think that what we need to do is to be keenly aware of the tactics that are used by corporate, fascist, and government infiltrators that will pretend to be part of your group. The same tactics and behaviors, whether they're consciously intentional or accidental or easily manipulated into, we can recognize as divisive and destructive, and we can create within our own internal prayer and our own behavior, our own attitude and relationships, and in our organizations and our actions, ways to be resilient and resistant to that. So what they do is they'll bring in someone who is pretend to be one of us, and they will start having ego trips. They will send gossip. They will backstab. They will pretend to be a victim or have a false authority on things. And then people will be confused because, well, we don't want to be racist and we want to be POC-centered, but that doesn't justify sexism or violence or theft or microaggressions by that POC. Or, well, we want to be with someone that's an expert, but that doesn't justify white supremacy that's internalized and it's oppressive. So if we recognize that there's principle, not person, if we say no gossip, that we have the Matthew Code, if there is an accusation, that we privately deal with that, we recognize we have our own junk, we bring our junk wherever we go, and we are accountable for that. If we are very clear about what behaviors are acceptable, if we stay focused on our purpose, agent provocateurs will try to have us do what undermines the purpose. At ICE, Occupy ICE PDX, whether it's an agent provocateur or not, the things that would undermine the purpose is if we are using a bullhorn, yelling profanities, verbally abusive to the cops, mm-hmm. It makes them look like the good guys, and then we lose credibility, we lose our allies on the streets holding up the signs showing that there's a wide range of folks, we lose the support of our neighbors and the local businesses and the politicians. If we are not going with consensus and support and going through the slow, awkward process, that can cause a lot of confusion. If we have double standards, if we are redirecting the purpose to something that's destructive or that's going to be splintering our group, if we're trying to rush things in when we're not prepared, if we're endangering people, if we're hurting the environment, if we're going against our professed values, whether that is someone who hasn't thought it through, a young hothead, or someone trying to take control over it, we can just protect ourselves from those tactics, those strategies, those results, and just keep reminding ourselves we need to get enough water, we need to get enough sleep, we need to not take things personally, and role model the values and the behavior that we want.
It looks like we have a couple more callers. Sally was going to say something.
Yeah, can I just hopefully.
Thanks for calling.
That in terms of strategies for nonviolent behavior, not just direct action, I think it's important to think about either informal or maybe even formal trainings and affinity groups so that people know each other. They know what the shared values are. They understand consensus consensus building, they understand the process of consensus. You're not so apt to have people intervening when you know each other, when there's sort of a process for people who come in, I suppose, to sort of participate, maybe observe, kind of. I would encourage people to do that, to come down and, come to, say, Occupy ICE and be there just sort of in the day-to-day process of what an occupation is for occupying. Okay. So that they're not just there when there is an action of some kind. It's important for people to come in for actions. But then the people that are there, that are living there, are in a different position than people who just come in.
We should probably try to go to the next caller, if that's possible. Hello, good morning. Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear us?
Hello?
I can hear you. Can, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Martin.
Hey.
I was wondering if there was going to be any kind of action or activism for the 2018 election, telephone calling, canvassing, any kind of thing to get out the vote or any kind of thing like that. Is there going to be any kind of organized
for November, for coming up in a few months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are many, many organizations. It seems to me most of them are promoting Democratic candidates, which I have a lot of problem with. But there's the Blue Wave. There's a whole lot of organizations that are getting out the vote. Sometimes, like the Democratic Party, will allow bad guys to do horrible things just to be able to say, now we have volunteers, now we have donors, now we have other stuff. But check out all the many, 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 many different organizations in the Portland area that are doing that. And I want to also mention that with ICE, there is Emerge, which is the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. And the Portland Buddhist Peace Fellowship and the CG Collective, which for over a year have been doing every other week prayerful meditative walks around ICE. And so the 1 year anniversary will be tomorrow, July 12th, from 11 to 2, meeting at a park, having prayerful meditation, and then a walk. It's going to be very, very hot, so be prepared for hot weather, and then being at ICE. And July 26th, my beloved union, the SEIU Service Employees International Union, which is a sanctuary union, will be with the request of Emerge, will be having a July 26, 10 to 12 rally, vigil, and march in support. You might not know that immigrant rights is a care issue, that over one quarter of the in-home care providers are immigrants. In nursing homes is a greater percentage, and almost all of the adult foster care homes are of immigrants. And that many of the people who are immigrants are victims of violence by their government or drug cartels or those funded by the U.S. government and domestic violence and are needing care. And many of the people in our elder care on Medicaid with disabilities are victims of domestic violence and social, racial, economic oppression that has long-term stress and physiological consequences. So we need to support immigrants, if only being selfish to care for who's going to take care of us.
And in terms of voting, which I think was the thing that was mentioned there specifically, a couple comments, and we may have an additional caller. Again, the phone number to call in, and we have a few minutes left, 503-231-8132. I'm voting at Portland.
8187.
8187. Thank you. See? That's why we have more than one person here. The phone number changed from when it was a while ago. But 503-231-8187. Sorry. At Portland State, we've been trying to emphasize getting out the vote, especially the May 15th primary, among younger voters. PSU is somewhat older as a school, but there's 30,000 students. The statistic we found was that in general, in midterm elections, voters age 18 to 21 turn out at 15%, 1-5. So we want to see that up, whether they're voting for candidates to the left of the Democratic Party or just alternative candidates to the predominant Republican Party. It looks like we did have another caller. Is that okay? Go ahead. Thanks for calling. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I'm George.
Hey.
I'm a KBOO supporter, and it seems to me that the last caller talking about the importance of immigrants and the things that they do, and also people who are here who are also doing good things to try to help different causes. We get to know each other if we don't wear masks. And that's one of the things that worried me when I saw some of the Antifa. I guess I saw a few just when I was walking downtown, and I didn't really realize I was had some other errand to do. I thought, my gosh. And then reflecting now, I just wondered if don't some people say, well, with masked people like that, they may know that their intentions are fine, but somebody could join them, dress like they are, and do some things that were pretty awful, and the people with the masks would get blamed. And I'm wondering how really has this issue of the masks been looked at from the standpoint of its, well, I would say negative possibilities. It seems the Antifa are awfully optimistic about the useful nature of their masks. To me, it looks like we're far better off if we can see each other. And if people want to stand between the police and the rest of the crowd, let's see them so we know who they are and they're courageous. We know that. So I just want to know, what do you and your program and the guests think? And I'll hang up and listen to the comments.
Thanks, George. Sally or Edie may have some thoughts on this issue.
Well,
a frequent objection.
My experience, of course, has been being a nonviolent direct action person, being out there with my face uncovered, witnessing in that particular way. But I think that's a different role than at least the Antifa did. I know the pronunciation is always an interesting thing, that they see for themselves. I can understand, though, that that could be a problem, that that's a place where agent provocateurs might easily appear, would be. I think there the important thing, though, may not only be the whether we know who they are, but whether they know who they are. I mean, I think Antifa itself is an affinity group of kinds, right? It has to be that they know each other very well. That's the only way you can establish that kind of identity and solidarity.
Yeah, I'm concerned. I've been, you know, being out on the streets at almost every protest, rally, march, and public hearing, well, for over 35 years in Portland. I've been very concerned that it's easy for fascists, corporatists, and cops to infiltrate those that have masks and to cause troubles. And I'm also concerned that these poor, innocent, sweet, idealistic kids don't seem to realize that I recognize the same kids. A mask doesn't hide you, especially with facial recognition software, with all the spying, all the surveillance. I want them to cover up a lot more for their safety. I want them to know each other better. Mm-hmm. I kind of figure, like, I recognize folks over and over. And I also, because of that, I think I recognize the same troublemakers from the Portland Police Bureau that come in and will cause trouble, that will only give them an excuse to get more overpay and more weapons and more violation of our human rights and blame it on some kids that didn't do it or that were egged into it by the cops under mask. But at the same time, where is the outrage at the police who do not show or give their badge number or the business card as required, who cover their faces, and we don't know who they are. We do not hold them accountable. I think we need to have Oregon law say, and especially City of Portland ordinance, that anyone that's using any components of riot control, riot gear, has to clearly on the top of their helmet, the front of their helmet, on their chest, on their back, on their shoulder, on their wrist, at the ankle of their boot, at 4 inches from the end of the baton, that they have identification number and last name depending upon the size of the space, that it's white and it's large and legible, and that could be Velcroed on and off. And if you don't have that, then you have no legal authority, because you could be committing a federal crime impersonating a law officer, so it's not a legal command for us to obey, and that you don't get paid, you get docked, and your private company or your agency is fined, because we need to know who it is and hold them accountable and not have us have the biggest portion of our Portland City budget go towards police, and then even more that goes to the lawsuits because of police criminal behavior. And we need to have an outrage over that, because they are to be our public servants. They have more weapons. They do more harm. They destroy lives. And we need to hold them accountable.
Now, police accountability is often an issue in most areas historically and in different countries. I also wanted to mention, again, to remind folks, there's still time if people want to call in, 503-231-8187. For immigration, and then I wanted to say a bit about police accountability. For immigration, next week, because we know we're doing, Sally and I, next week, Maria Garcia is coming and talking with us, which will be great. I've talked to her very briefly at La Revolucion coffee shop by Portland State. Maria ran for county commission, finished back in the pack. She didn't win in the May 15th primary. She's an immigrant and an immigrant organizer. She helped organize A Day Without Immigrants. She's working on a project for Day of the Dead in early November that hopefully she'll talk about. She's also an immigrant from Mexico. We're also working and contacting. I spoke on the phone with someone that we may try to get to be a guest, depending on where we are on the schedule in the next couple weeks, 3 weeks. Luis, I don't have his last name in front of me, but he's the new student body president at Portland State, and he's a dreamer. Balderas, I believe, is Luis's last name. I talked to him on the phone briefly this past weekend. Student government's interesting at Portland State. It has a bunch of resources, and we'll see if, as a dreamer, he is able to help organize on some of these issues. And there's always a question with immigrants with status that's being questioned by Trump and his attorney general, how visible they should be. But at least a student body president and wrote an article that got published in the Tribune. Some of us have actually been surprised recently this year that the Tribune has printed two or three things that we've submitted, which is good. But he wrote an article defending dreamers, and I happened to send in a long 14-paragraph thing responding to the critique that was in Friday's Tribune, or Thursday's Tribune last week, by Richard LaMountain. He's a longtime right-wing local volunteer commentator who just said the Dreamers don't know what they're talking about, the student body president has no clue, that Trump and Sessions are like really great guys enforcing the law. So basically, I don't know if the Tribune will print this one, but it basically said, like, support Dreamers, shut down ICE. And it looks like we may have another caller. Is that correct? Hello?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a story about 99 in Seattle. I was there. And I'll try to make it brief, but I was in a large march, completely filling the street, all the way across, both directions, as far as you could see, and I heard something behind me, and I turned around, and two large guys dressed completely in black, with black ski masks, were running through the crowd, and they had short iron bars. And they jumped up and broke the windows in a Bank of America. And then they ducked down so that they didn't show through the crowd, and they were running, and one of them ran right past me, and this small, older lady in a light blue belt jacket grabbed the ski mask as the guy went by, and it came off his head, and he stood up, and he was freaked out, and he was not an anarchist from Eugene. He was like a well-fed, clean-shaven, nice haircut, probably a cop, I would say. And what did he do then? He ran through the crowd toward a corner where on the corner of the by the building there were motorcycle cops
leaning on their motorcycles, lined up. He ran right through that group of motorcycle cops like he was invisible and disappeared into that building. And I saw that with my own eyes, okay? So I'm just telling you that. I just want to put it out there. They can do that. And I just wish I had just tripped that guy and jumped on him and taken his picture and everything. But I was so shocked. And that little lady in front of me was so cool, you know? And she exposed him. And there, that could happen. So I just want to put that out there. All these people talking about masks are right. Man, it's great for the bad guys to get in there. Okay, that's all I had to
say. Sure, thanks a lot for calling.
Good show. Great show, by the way. Thank you.
Thanks. Comments, thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I was interested in what you said about the way the police might identify themselves. I've never heard that before. And I think that it makes a lot of sense. The people should be, if they represent the rule of law, they represent the citizenry, they don't represent the police department.
They're supposed to be a terrorist organization to control workers and taxpayers, and we can say no. And you will not be on the front line. We will not follow your orders, and you will not get paid. Mm-hmm. And you will not be defended in court unless you have all this identification. And they can say, oh, we can't afford the few cents for this little white patch that is Velcroed on. Nonsense.
Well, and at one point, I'm not sure if it's still true, there was an ordinance, I believe, passed in Portland that, at least for Portland police, they were supposed to have business cards so that people mm-hmm. who are getting accosted just in everyday stuff and at demonstrations could get the business card of that particular police. There seems to be a great deal of discretion by one of the projects we worked on at PSU, TriMet, by fare inspectors against riders of color and low-income homeless riders in particular, but also police in general. That there was just a study, I don't know if Sally and Edie had seen it, but it suggested that statistically 50% of the people targeted by fare inspectors were low income or
I see that when I'm on the bus and
color.
Max.
We have a couple minutes left. I appreciate people who called in. Since Sally and I are going to be doing this, there's one other caller, and I'll get to that caller in 30 seconds. since Sally and I are going to do this next week as well, I want to make sure we're trying to emphasize intersectionality. So I'll mention it when we start next time about having women callers. I think today all men have called. So there's another caller. If that caller is on the line, we can talk to that person. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, this is Linda.
Hey. Good morning.
And I wanted to make sure my speaker phone was off. I wanted to say facial recognition software. If you've been to the DMV in the last 2 or 3 years, you've had your photo taken.
Yes, I just did that 3 weeks ago, and they did facial recognition software. And it took like 4 or 5 different things to get it right.
There's a large article in the New York Times about Facebook facial recognition. So there's a reason why people who are doing their, are on the First Amendment rights, talking to the government, do not want their photos taken because they don't trust this government not to use those in nefarious ways. If they know their identity, or to later make what they're doing illegal and charge them. So I think there are other reasons than got mentioned about why wear masks. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks. There's a teacher at Portland State, Barbara Dudley, who taught a class about WTO and trade. And what we read about and understood was that one of the theories behind the masks is that kind of what maybe Edie said before, the police tend to be kind of anonymous, and especially in WTO, and the riot cops in Portland, they're all pretty dressed in a uniform, and they kind of are intentionally looking all the same. That's why police and other sorts of government officials have uniforms to start with, to promote their anonymity. And therefore, because there's a bunch of them, this is true with fare inspectors as well, people are far less likely to stand up for civil rights. One of the things we'll try to do is contact Casey Jama with Unite Oregon and a woman from, I believe, the David Douglas School Board, who's been accosted a couple times. I believe she's Latinx, by TriMet fare inspectors in terms of racial profiling. Something that Casey's been promoting is something we should be protesting. We're kind of out of time, although I think we have 60 seconds, roughly. Any concluding thoughts?
I just want to make sure that people come down to Occupy ICE. Bring your different signs. You can come by bus 35 or 36. You can come at the end of the streetcar. There's street parking, some requiring credit cards, some coins. do not park in like Spaghetti Warehouse or other places, a Spaghetti Factory, and also come to the Sunday vigils at the Hollywood Max, and that's Sundays from 6 to 8. We need to show a wide variety of folks who are caring. We need to have you come tomorrow, July 12th. Go to the website to find out the latest start place, because we're talking about Elizabeth Carruthers Park on 3508 Southwest Moody, between the bottom of the tram and the ice, or at the Willamette Park, where there's lots of free parking.
That looks like the end of our time, but I want to thank Sally and Edie for coming and blurbing upcoming things that people can come to. Thanks a lot for listening, and good morning.
KABU hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KABU at the Clinton. This month we'll screen the film Behemoth on Thursday, July 12th at 7 p.m. Behemoth is a Chinese documentary showing the dehumanizing impact of coal mining. After the film will be a discussion on clean energy alternatives. Again, that's a film screening of the documentary Behemoth, Thursday, July 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open